You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
So, what are you guys going to do? You going to continue to be a bunch of soft, underperforming, tattooed millionaires?
They said all along, perfection is not possible. We just want to get the big decisions right.
What are we doing? What are we doing?
Green room getting hot.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
The right answer was a goal in Times Square so we could do butts up. But that was an easy one.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental on MLSsoccer.com. I am Andrew Wiebe, as always, here in the green room, David Goss. It's a Monday, so that means Bobby Warshaw is with us. Matt Doyle begged out. Not sure what his excuse is. I'm sure it's a very valid one, but we're here to talk about the MLS weekend as it was. And you remember, ESPN Plus is now where RIP MLS Live lives. If you're in Canada, MLS Live is on DAZN. So there's that update for you. And, of course, you got the MLS app. It's out new. You got your fantasy through that. Go download that. How you guys doing? Did you miss me on Thursday? Did Dave guide
the
ship
well? Yeah,
like
you said, as always, when you literally weren't here for the
last show. Always in spirit. It's you know, I was trying to pre-produce you from home. I was texting you. I was like, talk about this.
I wish
I could talk about the Lee Wynn news. I'm so bummed that I don't get to, like, hear what Bobby thinks about this Sounders spending drama.
But did you hear what Bobby thinks about Lee Wynn?
I did not.
He thinks he's potentially one of the best holding midfielders in MLS.
I think that's potentially a stretch.
You missed that conversation.
Yeah, that's a stretch.
I forgot about that conversation.
I know it's a Friday when I check the ETR account, Twitter account, and there's a lot of people that are like, what is this Bobby Warshaw guy talking about?
This is the prime example of my time here at ETR. I'll be like, yeah, it'll be interesting to see Lee Wynn play defensive midfield. Next thing I know, 2 days later, somebody's in my inbox saying, I cannot believe you said Lee Wynn is the best defensive midfielder in the league.
I'm consistently
shocked. In fairness, you were pretty strong on that.
I think. Remember this?
I said that Lee Wynn may end up playing that spot if you look at the way their team is set up. It's not probable, but there's a scenario where it happens.
Okay.
All right. He presented the scenario. I appreciate that. I think the one thing to remember here, Bobby, is that a lot of people listen to this show that you would not expect to listen to this show. We are influencers in the weirdest way. And when you throw out your Lee Wynn defensive midfield takes, you're influencing. So I appreciate that.
So you're saying if Bob Bradley listens
to the show and it
No, I'm not saying that. But if I was, I would like do a lot more pausing in my speaking. And I, you know, what's said in this room stays in this room. Inside the green room, it doesn't get out. No, I'm just saying. I appreciate your willingness and ability to think outside the box, Bobby.
Thanks,
that's what
man.
Makes
I really
that's
appreciate
that's
that.
What makes you such a special addition to the show.
I really appreciate that.
And
he said
education.
That with a straight face.
Yes, I did.
That felt good.
Ben Bear is going to come on in the mailbag as he always does, and we have some folks also in the mentions saying they'll never listen to this show again if Ben Bear continues on it. So we'll give him an opportunity to respond to that. We're also going to talk to Gam Tam and Sam Stashkul about different tiers in MLS and how that may be shaking out in the era of Tam. Of course, we've got the weekend rundown, a Red Wedding Part 2, maybe 6 straight wins for Orlando City. Zlatan is going in on the Galaxy. They lost again. Barco got a goal. San Jose is basically flushing their season down the toilet.
Also, an unreal set of midweek games.
Yeah, no. I'm excited.
Arguably two of the biggest games of the year are happening on Wednesday night.
We'll get to those. Okay. Let's start with the Red Wedding because it's not the Red Wedding. We need a new name for this one. It's not the 7-0, but it could have been 7-0. It could have been 6-0. There were two like obvious clear handballs by Alexander Collins that didn't get called. Of course, instant replay is your place to hear Bobby and I break those down. But this was a shellacking. This was such a shellacking that Patrick Vieira is coming out afterwards saying he wanted to have 10 subs so he could make them all at halftime. Like, New York City FC were the team that we were sitting in this room, I mean, I think just a couple weeks ago, saying, oh, yeah, this is the best team in MLS. Like, I don't know how to mock all of us.
Oh, yeah, Doyle's not
voice.
On the show because I had a good mailbag thing for him, which was someone sending in a message that said, NYCFC losing 2 games in a row like that is funny only because Matt is so in love with them.
I mean, I thought a lot of us were in love with them. But this is the sort of performance that makes you fall out of love.
Tranquilo.
I think it's unfair that – so from my point of view, I was sitting in the stadium, so it's like you don't always get the best
– Yeah, it's hard to have
whatever,
that, like,
but sometimes you get a better one. I don't know. I think it's unfair that Patrick Vieira would make that statement because I thought he was outclassed by Jesse Marsh. So
let's
I think it's unfair for him to put it on the players. The way I watched this game was Florian Vallot starting, plays as another central midfielder, and so he comes in defensively when they're off the ball. And I think Yangel Herrera touched the ball 5 times, and Alexander Ring touched the ball 4. And so they completely took away their game plan. Tyler Adams man-marked Maxi Morales in the first half, and then the second half, Jesse switched it around once he was up. And they played direct the entire time, which isn't their game, and no one was able to feel comfortable or find the ball.
I thought the same thing about Patrick Vieira's comments, that if you live by the way that they play and you say, we're going to do it at all costs, and then if your team messes up doing it, that's not on your players. You applaud your players for their bravery to try and do the game plan in a tough scenario. And I'll take, was it the first goal when Maxime Cheneau heads the ball right back to the middle and Red Bulls pick it up and go straight at goal? The first or the second goal?
Yeah.
To me, that's the prime example of where a coach can have an impact. Because in that kind of game where you know you're going to get pressed, you just say, guys, if we're not going to play our way in the first 5 minutes, Maxime, don't try and head that down to the defensive midfielder. Put your foot through it. Put in the other end. So I'm with you, David. I was very surprised that Patrick Vieira put this on his players when they just executed what he wants. Yes, they did it poorly, but it's your job as a coach to understand when your style might not come off right against an opponent.
I mean, 5 minutes in, you're down 2-0, and Red Bulls fans are just ba-da-ch, da-da-ch, da-da, with the Rage Against the Machine in the background.
Was
getting
that what
yacked.
That
didn't sound like it? That was not, I thought that was a great. I mean, well, I'm gonna make you play the song coming out of a break so that I can hear it just to like make a comparison there. By the end of the first half, it's 3-0. By the end of the game, it's 4-0. As I said, 2 handballs missed. I'm with you guys in the sense that don't call your players out when your game plan didn't seem up to snuff. Now, if you think that the effort wasn't there, which is what Patrick Vieira did come out and say, they didn't think they had desire, didn't think they like really put their all into it. Now, that's a different story.
Yeah.
You can throw the tactics part out of that, but certainly you have to take some of the blame as the head coach when your team loses in that way. It's not all one-way traffic, one-way blame.
I was also surprised that he was just so mad in general. This happens during a season. Teams get blown out. They play poorly. Getting blown out in this game does not mean you're going to struggle.
But sure, but
the
there's
game.
A difference between this being like the Colorado Rapids, which, by the way, who wouldn't blow them out 4-0, but being a game where you're like, oh, you know what? That was the Vancouver Whitecaps. We went to Vancouver, BC Place. It was a weird midweek, or, you know, whatever, whatever. This is a rivalry match.
Also, when you look at a season, so like when we look at a season, right, in what we do, you have tentpole events, right? Rise and fall. It's the same, I think, when you look at a team of like, okay, you can prove yourself in a few ways. You can prove yourself over the course of a season. You also can prove yourself in big moments, right? We're a playoff league. You have to prove yourself in the playoffs. How else can you show yourself? There's rivalry week. There's these big rivalry games. There's games against other supporters, Shield contenders. Those are big moments that your club
builds
up.
US Open Cup.
Yeah, that your club builds up, that the team builds up to say, this is a big moment that we want to perform for. And they completely came out flat on that one.
So what happened on this one? They've been so good all year. Even the game they lost against Portland, they were largely good.
Yeah.
They had 75% of the ball. They made a few mistakes and got punished for them. I was just surprised to see them be so upset after this one game, especially against a good team. I mean, that is, the Red Bulls do that to a lot of teams. And I'm surprised that Patrick Vieira didn't just shake it off, you know, smush his hands together, whatever that's called, and say on to the next one. Yes, we got outplayed. We'll learn from it. This does not define who we are or how we're going to play moving forward.
Can we talk about the fact that Bobby thinks that, like, knocking dirt off your hands is called smushing your hands together?
What would you call that?
He's
I don't
from
know, there's
the
not
can
like a,
expert.
Yeah,
he's
there's
a
not, like,
worker.
A perfect phrase for this. But, I mean, it would just, you know, it's like
I blew that.
Shake your, you know,
dust.
Shake it
you
off
get
and
the
move
idea.
On.
Dust.
You, get, yeah,
right,
right.
you can visually I mean, see what I'm
the
doing.
The smush, but it's a podcast. So you can't.
We're going to get in a lot of trouble. I will, especially if we don't follow up on that point. You said the Red Bulls are a good team.
Mm-hmm.
Are they a great team? In MLS. Kaku looked really good in this game.
3 goals, 6 assists, and 7 matches so far this season. 1 goal, 2 assists in his last two. We were at the one in LA, and now this one.
And the type of them, right? A lot of them were around the 18 in tough moments where we've complained about this team in the past.
Didn't they just lose last weekend?
They beat the Galaxy.
And then they lost to who before that?
If you're going to make these points, shouldn't you be like coming with the answers?
I tried to whisper it to you guys.
It's
an MLS
season. They lost 2-1 to the Fire, which was not a great loss.
So
yeah,
NYCFC lost to Red Bulls. Red Bulls
say
lost
what you're
to
trying
Fire.
To say here.
I'm
you're
just
trying
to say
they're not that good a team.
I'm not going to put them into the top four. They are very good. They are incredibly impressive. Are they in that top four with Toronto, Atlanta, and NYCFC? I would say three.
And you're just throwing wait.
Yeah,
who's
the fourth?
Sorry,
just,
it's three.
NYCFC just got
Doyle has him as their as his fourth. I only have a top three. I still think they're outside of those.
Oh my god, you invented your top three just to exclude them. And you included a team that lost 4-0.
That's fair, but one game does
and
not.
Whose coach said they wanted to sub everyone off the field?
How can you say one game doesn't define them and then say the Chicago Fire loss from 2 weeks ago defines the Red Bulls?
I'm not letting him define them. I'm just saying it's part of a sample size, and the overall sample is that the Red Bulls are very, very good. If you had to say, are they better than the three teams ahead of them, I would not. Here is my big takeaway from this game. And before the weekends, I often write down what I expect to happen and then compare it to what actually does to see if I truly know anything. And you guys out there can guess what the answer is. But before this game, I had said, with the way NYCFC plays, it would be the Red Bulls who reacted, and the Red Bulls trying to stifle NYCFC. And in my head, I said, if NYCFC plays their best with the way these teams line up, that NYCFC has the advantage, and the Red Bulls only have a chance because NYCFC will not be sharp on that day. It turned out to be the opposite, and I have changed that view to say the Red Bulls are actually the instigator in every game. And if the Red Bulls come out at their best with the velocity they played with against NYCFC, then they can often – maybe Atlanta is another team that does this, that if they play at their pace, it's just impossible for anyone to keep up. But I will also say that we can all agree this is the highest velocity we've seen this team play at. They've been good at times, but nothing like what they've done, what they did this weekend.
Yeah, I think opponents for Red Bulls is about trying to, especially at home, at Red Bull Arena, is trying to blunt that velocity and like take away the spaces and the opportunities for them to turn and come at you with that directness that makes them so maddening to play against. But I want to just pitch something here, a segment from Bobby called In My Head, where it's just all the thoughts that Bobby has percolating,
there's
trickling, the things that you thought you knew. I mean,
It's a dark place.
I was going to say, I've read 144 pages of
261.
That. 261. Wow, really?
Right
it
the
went
top.
By fast, though. It was
yeah,
well written.
It did. It was well written. BWP, 11 goals in 10 New York Derby games. That is absolutely
kind of
frustrating.
Flip side stat. You know the stat on the other side? Hmm. David Villa, how many goals at Red Bull Arena?
Zero.
Zero. This has been BW's fixture, let's say. He gets it done in this one. Red side of New York, they're celebrating. 4-0 winners here. Take the New York Derby. Big win for them.
Seven NYRB2 players on the field at the same time.
You know what?
Derek Etienne Jr.
Let's
gets a goal.
Real quick,
gets a goal.
We got to move on. But like, I just want to shout out to Red Bulls for the way they've used USL. Because I remember going to do games with you or like talking about the games. And it's like you watch him, you're like, oh, who's this Florian Velo guy? Who's this Vincent Bezecourt guy? And you do the background work on him or, you know, Aaron Long, actually, I remember before he got really the call-up, we did those playoff games. And it's like, oh, you know, this is the background. It's kind of – it's humble in a lot of ways. Oh, Florian Velo went to Rider University, blah, blah, blah. Well, Red Bulls have taken 2 years and, like, churned out high-quality starters. Velo gets a goal in this game off a deflection, but he's an impact player for them. Vincent Bezecourt in USL has a filthy through-ball assist – Ben Mines has come up and scored a goal. Derek Etienne was blooded, gets a goal in this game. Tyler Adams was the first direct to USL signing, and now he is a stud. Like, we talk about
Sean
USL.
Davis gets the start.
Right. We talk about USL pipeline, and so many teams don't do it very well, to be completely
well, they do it the best.
Honest. Right, but that's what I'm saying. But Red Bulls are this shining light of like, oh, that's what a pyramid within your club of development does.
This is why when you guys are like, look how good that team is. Look at all the players they signed. Look how talented they are. You know what matters more than talent and more than signing players?
System.
Just stinking coaching and developing players. So this conversation makes me very happy.
Yeah, where do we want to go next? I'll give you guys some choices here. Peter Vermees re-upped with Sporting Kansas City until 2023. So there's implications there for U.S. national team, both GM and head coaching. He says he's been reached out to about both, but the ball's not in his court. You
can
talk about Orlando City's
six
straight
wins. So let me ask
this.
This means that if he gets offered the U.S. national team job, he can still take it.
Correct. For sure.
Does this change anything? Was he ever going to be pushed out the door at SKC?
No.
So he's re-signed.
This is a matter of security between himself.
For sure. No, I understand that. But from our conversation point of view, from a U.S. national team and SKC point of view, he's there as long as he wants to be there. And if he wants to go to the U.S. national team and they want him, he can take that option.
I would
as well.
Think that there are now some bargaining complications here. That not that there weren't before when he was under contract through 2019, but now you know, as with players, maybe there's a buyout the Sporting Kansas City are asking for. Maybe this changes the compensation that he's asking for. Regardless, it gives him the long-term platform to continue building this project. I mean, he is, as they kind of have joked about, like, he is the CEO of soccer. He's the guy who designs what's going to happen on the field and every step in the ladder to that point from the academy on upwards. I mean, I think this is a no-brainer for Sporting Kansas City. He's been there the longest of any MLS head coach.
Number two, second
longest
tenured,
Benny Olsen, I would have to guess. Yeah, he came on in 2006 as the technical director, more than a decade ago. I remember August 2009, Kurt Anolfo just wasn't working, and this was like, what do you want to do? And he's saying, oh, I don't know, and it's the ownership's like, we want you to coach. Go coach. Coach this team. And now they've become what they've become, which is one of the best organizations in MLS, one of the best teams in MLS, one of the teams now that gets harped on for playoff failures, but they're always there,
yeah,
always competitive, and do not have the $15 million Barcos, the you know, Zlatans, the Bastian Schweinsteigers, the David Villas, do it in a little different way.
Doyle definitely would have made a Johan Quaze joke right there.
Yeah, probably the
but
Quaze
we're above
jokes.
That.
Look, Felipe's out, so maybe
clearly
Quaze
not.
Can pick it up. Daniel Shaoui.
Is phenomenal.
I love Daniel Shaoui.
Yeah, he's so good.
I want to make a point about Peter Vermees real quick, and it's a story I wrote on the website right now, but he did a really cool thing this weekend that, to me, epitomizes the development of Peter Vermees. And, Andrew, we were talking in the office about who was Peter Vermees circa 2012 and what were their teams?
They were the team that was like, we're going to press you. We're going to try to win it up the field. They were like much like the Rebels before the Rebels. We're going to be very direct. They did it a little bit of a different way. They had big kind of physical target wingers, essentially.
Ooh. Yep.
And Doyle
now,
buzzword right
I'm
there.
I'm just saying. Now, I mean, Kai Kamara, CJ Sapong, like the OG yeah. target wingers.
And now they're a team that leads the league in passes attempted. And there is a tactical move that he did this weekend just by shifting the movement of Graham Zuzi, Roger Espinoza, and whichever right winger was on the field. It was just cool to see. And it was impressive to see Vermees' development from this guy that said, let's go work hard, let's go be organized, to kind of conjuring some Pep Guardiola in the way he set up the team.
But don't discount, like, work hard, be organized. And he's doing, like, the arm thrust yeah. thing that every coach does when they say that. Like, it's literally, like, yeah, work hard, get organized. He, like, from a tactical perspective, he was one of the first coaches to come in and really, both from marketing the way you play, as well as having a very defined style, to help usher in the league where it is now, where you're saying, like, we are a team that does this. We are the Rebels.
Absolutely.
We have this identity, and it may be a hard-working identity, but it is tactically nuanced, and it takes a ton of drilling to get it right with our players. And by the way, not just drilling, but recruitment. You have to get the right players. There's a reason why Aurelien Collin is a best 11 in that system and probably not in other ones. There's a reason why you cycle through defensive midfielders that just fit perfectly, and Uri Rossell becomes a commodity.
Sasanovic went from threatening to retire to being an MLS Cup winner.
I would not have called it tactically nuanced for those first 4 or 5 years. It was simple, and through that simplicity, they found an advantage because they executed what they had very, very well.
Also, his hands,
and everyone was on the same
also
page.
Also, his hand's been forced because people have reacted to what he does.
Correct.
Right? Also, a game this weekend where Colorado's not going to take the ball.
We keep
so
talking about the game this weekend, by the way. 1-0 win. We mentioned Daniel Shalhoub because he scored the
goal.
Yeah,
you can't press a team. That doesn't
no, I agree. This is
possession.
What I'm trying to say. Take nothing away from Peter Vermees. I've been very impressed, not just with his success, but how he has evolved and grown. And now he's not just putting an organized team on the field. He's putting the team that is one of the best in the league at possessing the ball.
So I question, though, what the next step is. And we talk about this project, but all we've been talking about for the last 2 years is, can he get the right player in to make that last run with this group?
Right.
Has he rebuilt, or is he going to rebuild SKC? Because you say 2012 was when this whole thing kind of came together, right? Sporting Park, that style.
That was 11. Yeah, it was 11.
Right.
But,
and then 2013, you win MLS Cup.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's been 6 years. Obviously, Zusi's not the same player. A lot of other guys have moved on. You've brought Roger Espinoza back. But what is the future for SKC? Who's it built through? And that's the question for me still. And I don't doubt that Peter Vermees can be that guy. But you got to start seeing a move at some point of, I'm ensuring the future because
I actually have no idea what you're talking about. The biggest example
is Eric Palmer Brown. That was a guy you could build your club around for the next 10 years because Matt Beisler and Graham Soucy and Roger Espinosa were the guys you built your club around the last 7 years. And Eric Palmer Brown didn't get the playing time. It wasn't handled correctly. Now he's gone. Who are the players that Peter Vermes is building this club around for the next 7 years?
Here's the one thing I would say about Eric Palmer Brown. Him leaving is not necessarily the problem. Him leaving for nothing is the problem because if you're going to build this sustainable, I don't know, conveyor belt, whatever it is, to build either your first team or your future, you need to be getting assets from the guys you develop. They didn't get it from Eric Palmer Brown. So like you said, that's not ideal. But in these releases, in these interviews after Peter's news was announced and his extension came through, they're talking a lot still about the academy and how that will be the basis of this team going forward. But I just don't see, and I could be completely wrong, Peter Vermes could have his big board up and say, you know what, we've got 8 guys that I think have first-team ability that could hit within the next 4 or 5 years. And that would be huge. But as it stands right now, you've got what? You have Jalen Lindsey, Gianluca Busio. Neither of those guys look particularly close. Lindsey's certainly closer just based on age. They have talent, no doubt. But things happen. Players don't turn out. And so I think you're right. What is the basis of this next generation for Sporting Kansas City? How do they compete? Because he admitted it. Peter did. They aren't going to spend like Atlanta United. They're probably not going to be the team where, I don't know, Bastian Schweinsteiger, David Villa goes. They need to find ways to exploit the system, the inefficiencies that are there. That's how Peter Vermes has done it, and it's how he'll continue to have to do it.
What I'm taking away from this is that you think that Peter Vermes thinks that they might not be good for 2 or 3 years, and this new deal is him telling his front office that and asking for security, that he needs time post-Beisler, post-Zuzi, post-Espinosa, which could be the next 2 or 3 years, that he needs that next year or two to rebuild.
Well, he's saying
there is the possibility that they won't be
well,
good.
No, but when you have sports teams, right, you build something with a timeline, and then a lot of times people leave, even when they're in the perfect place, right? Even when they're in their dream job or they've just won 4 titles, then they leave because the idea of rebuilding it is tough. Vermes is saying, I want to do that, and I think in this contract is saying, and I want the security to know that you'll be with me in those down times so that I have a chance to turn it around.
I think it's more like U.S. Soccer is in a position where they're looking for their next guy, whether that's GM or head coach, and Peter is a clear and obvious choice for that.
Yeah,
so if you're the ownership group for Sporting Kansas City, you're saying, look, you have been the foundation of everything that we have accomplished on the soccer side. Remember where the Wizards were when they bought this team, when Peter Vermes took over this team, both as TD and then as the head coach. They weren't in a great place. From a organizational health standpoint, business-wise, from an on-the-field health standpoint, Peter Vermes got them there. And yes, the pillars have remained the same. The Graham Zusis, the Beislers, the Espinosas,
also,
though he came and went. But he has – there's been a lot of turnover.
Yeah. They also, by the way, built a new stadium and rebranded.
Agreed.
That's not all Peter Vermes.
Sure, but if you're not winning consistently through that time, you don't become what you are in Kansas City. So Peter has had the dexterity both in the market – in the different draft mechanisms and all these different ways that you construct a roster to keep them competitive throughout the year. So I don't think they're saying we think we're going to be bad. They're saying we think you, Peter Vermes, the thinker, the creative problem solver, the leader of our organization, can help us not rebuild but reload and change who we are perhaps in some ways over the next 5 years to stay competitive in a changing MLS. We think that you are the right soccer mind to do that. You will adapt.
Let me ask you this. If you were to start a franchise and you think, obviously it'd be nice to have a star player, but really for the long term, you want a bright mind at even above that star player, is Peter Vermes the first person you call on to lead your MLS franchise?
If you're Kansas City?
Anyone. I'm asking for the big picture. Is it a Garth Lager way? Is it a Jesse Marsh?
I think you're ignoring something that's really important in this for Kansas City, which is that long-term relationship and the fact that Peter both knows and loves and is committed to the community, which matters in a city like Kansas City, but also is happy to work within some of the financial constraints that he has. Now, they have the most incredible facility from a training perspective. Their stadium is incredible. So I'm not saying that Sporting Kansas City hasn't spent, but I'm saying he's come in and said, I find it engaging and thrilling to try to win in creative ways. And that's really important for both he and the owners.
So that goes to Bobby's question. If you were not Sporting KC, but you were a similar team and you were in LAFC situation, which is we're launching a brand new team. You get to hire your dream coach. Is he that guy for you?
I would hope that – I think he definitely could be.
Who else is in the conversation? Let's make a quick short list right now. Yeah.
Out of MLS.
Bob Bradley, 100%.
Jesse Marsh.
Jesse Marsh is
Peter
in there
Vermees,
for sure.
Bob Bradley. Greg Berhalter.
Greg Berhalter is definitely there.
Tim Bezbacheco.
Patrick Vieira is 100% there.
Is he? Do we think Patrick Vieira is in this top five or six of guys who...
Coaches?
No, we're not talking about coaches.
We're talking about administrators.
He's saying basically two parts. What do you consider most important? And who would you pick? So, Bobby's saying, do you think what Garth Lagerwey does is most important? And if so, as a GM type guy who brings in the talent... Who would you pick?
Building
as your
a
favorite?
Roster, building a culture, right. Picking players,
well,
picking
the thing,
a style.
Okay,
here's
coach
the
with
thing.
A philosophy is most important.
I mean, that is a very big question that I don't truly think I have a great handle on, and I don't want to be like, this is my guy. I mean, I like all these guys for different reasons. What I will say about a Greg, a Berhalter to Vermees comparison, they're pretty close because both those guys are controlling everything. Lagerwey doesn't control everything. He doesn't get to be in the locker room and say, Brian Schmetzer, you will play this way. Brian Schmetzer, you will do it
this
way.
Although he does get to hire that guy.
Correct. But he didn't hire Brian Schmetzer.
No, but he does
get
to
hire. Well, he did, but it was,
Yeah.
It was like Brian Schmetzer hired himself. He went out and won a championship and was like, this guy's the head coach, period. Peter is the czar. And the other thing I think for Kansas City is like the uncertainty on the other side of that. If you get rid of the guy who's kept you both competitive and with the trophy hunt every single year and go somewhere else – can that guy do the job, especially when Peter controls everything?
Can I ask you another pivoted question?
Sure.
Can you name five center midfielders over the last 10 years who have been better over that span than Roger Espinoza?
Over how long?
8 years, 10 years, however long
for
he's been in his prime.
For a year or two or for that whole?
For the whole thing. And even taking the 3 years.
I'm a Roger stan.
I know. Sometimes I think to myself, maybe we undervalue Roger Espinoza for a little bit. When I was in the league, I thought that him, Beckerman, Alonso were the three best.
Sasha Kleshchen's probably in that category. Kleshchen's been in the league now for, 4 years in a row?
Yeah, but I think that longevity that Roger
the
has.
The longevity, his total
Roger
influence.
Roger left.
He did leave.
For 3 years, but he's still been almost 10.
I mean, here's the thing about Roger is he is always going to be undervalued in some ways because some people didn't appreciate him from the start and he got a bad rep and he just had to live with that for a long time as this undisciplined guy who's just a hacker and people didn't recognize some of the like technical and tactical and just like soccer intelligence things that he does where it's like, oh, I hate how he fouled that guy. But the guys on his team are like, thank God he fouled that guy.
Marcelo Sarvas. I was just rooting around.
I thought we were struggling. I've done this a lot. And Roger Espinoza is one of the best.
So Sasha and Benny Failhaber are in the conversation.
Yeah.
I would take Espinoza over Benny.
Okay, that's fair. Also, they're different styles of player.
Contribution to their team and their influence.
Beckerman's easy one. Ozzy Alonso's an easy one as well.
Dax.
And including the fact that he went to an MLS Cup with Dallas.
Because Roger didn't win that MLS Cup. He wasn't a part of the team that won the cup.
I truly thought that SKC was going to fall apart. I thought he was the single person that turned that club. When they won without him, I thought it was incredible.
Look, I'm a huge Roger stan.
I just wanted to plant that seed in your heads.
Look, that's a great question for folks at home to answer. Six straight wins
Davi
for
Ferreira?
Orlando City.
Davi Ferreira
was an MVP. Yeah.
An attacker.
I'm going to change you to Orlando City if that's okay. Sasha Kleshchen, you can talk about him.
Yeah, let's do
3-1
it.
3-1 win, 6 straight.
If you want to mark your bingo boards off, that's a good transition, Weeby.
There you go. Well, I was just trying to like forcibly remove you guys from the conversation there. So they've beaten RSL, Colorado, San Jose, Philly, Portland, and the New York Red Bulls, kind of like a smattering of first team and second team USL players.
Sorry, I just wanted to go through that again. So right now we're looking at that's 6 straight games. RSL, who I think right now we'd say we don't feel is a playoff team, right?
Below the playoff line, I don't think they'll look like a playoff team.
Colorado.
They also just lost again.
Colorado, San Jose currently don't look like playoff teams.
Below the line.
Philly.
Below the line. Terrible.
Best team in the East by Bobby standards. So they get one of three votes.
Portland.
Who have been up and down, but okay.
3 straight wins, still below the line.
I also believe Portland, that was the last game of their starting the year, four or five
on the
road.
And there was they got crushed for 80 minutes and then scored three crazy goals in the last 10.
And then Red Bulls, USL team, but as
in the middle of CCL. Actually, that was a wild game that Orlando maybe shouldn't have won as well.
But also, Red Bulls, USL team is pretty good.
So. Yeah, they're pretty good, yeah. So decent win, but they maybe shouldn't have won that. So that's six straight. Orlando fans want their daps.
Yeah.
They want their props. Their next four are home against Atlanta, rivalry game there, at Toronto, home against the Fire, and at NYCFC. So much better teams. How are they going to cope? Is this a good team? Is this a team that's benefited from opposition that is not so good?
Here's what I'll say. If you watch Orlando and you think that they've been playing well, I'm not sure that we can have a soccer conversation. The second thing I will say.
You've got to stop saying that, dude, because you can't have soccer conversations with anyone anymore.
Guess you're not going to Central Florida.
That's fair.
My
second part to this is to say this was the first game when I actually understood and kind of liked what I saw. I still don't think they played well. I hope that Orlando fans are excited, but I also hope that they're a little worried. I don't hope anything for Orlando fans. I don't know why I said that. But this was at least the first game that made sense what they were doing. They are a back-and-forth team with talented players, and they're going to make a back-and-forth game, and they don't need or want possession or dominance of the ball. They're okay with an open game, hoping that one of their five stars does a better job at creating a goal than the other teams. And that's what happened this weekend. A guy that makes $75,000 or $80,000 missed, and three guys that make $500,000 all scored. And that's fine to have that be your game plan. I don't trust it in harder games, but that'll get you to the playoffs.
So this is what's really interesting to me. That style of game versus Atlanta will be fun because they're both in transition. Can they do it versus Atlanta, basically, which team's stars are better? Then you go against Toronto and NYCFC.
Or
two
no.
Teams that
Atlanta has a
defense.
Cohesive system.
Yeah, Atlanta's
back
defense
to front,
is better.
They work as a unit. It's very clear what they're good at and what they accomplish, what they try and accomplish.
Okay. Then you go against Toronto and NYCFC, two teams that aren't going to play wide open, that have an idea of how they're going to play. And so then over these next four games, you're going to see Orlando against two or three of the top teams in the league that play different ways, and how does Orlando react? Because the way Bobby's saying, and I agree with the way they play, a team like NYCFC should pick them apart because they don't have a cohesive style on defense. They don't really know where they want to be at all times, and they have individual struggles right now at center back and at left back. So that matchup would be a big one for if they can get a win there and they can get a win versus Atlanta or Toronto, you can say, okay, I can see what they're trying to build towards the
this
playoffs.
Is the Bobby, like, prove it thing that you do before everybody. Like, you're good? Prove it. Show me. They have four games with different styles that they'll have to adapt to with teams that are much better formed, like, across the board, talent, tactics, whatever, yeah. Experience. Now you have to do it against good teams. Congratulations. 18 points in six games is perfect. And that's exactly what this team needed after a start where we were all like, uh-oh, pressure's getting heaped on you.
I got fired up yesterday after I got some tweets from Orlando fans saying, hey, see that? And I wrote an article that I didn't submit because it was basically like, you know what? I will not apologize for happening to think a good soccer team should be able to connect passes. I will not apologize for happening to think that a good soccer team should not let a single pass bypass nine players. I won't apologize for happening to think a good soccer team should be able to keep tight lines and not let players go through them. So just because you are winning does not mean you are a good team.
Let's also not look at RSL and say this team knows what they're doing, by the way. Corey Baird with the one goal in this game. RSL go up. Orlando fight back, which is their MO. RSL, you know, it's... feels like a long time ago that we were hoping this team makes the playoffs and saying this is the one of the most exciting teams in Major League Soccer and will be for the next year and got us all hyped up and now feeling like I don't know much about RSL and what they're doing. 3-1 losers. Dom Dwyer gets a goal. Lamina Sané scores on a set piece. Yoshi Yotun. Sané, I believe, on that first goal for RSL was doing the old offside line. Hand up.
Oh.
Pretty sure that's like the standard these days.
Sorry, I thought you were going to reference something else because he did Wakanda Forever celebration on his goal. I thought that's what you were referencing.
Nope, it wasn't. My bad. LA lose again. San Jose are in a bad, bad, bad place. Miguel Ibarra basically wins games for the Loons. You mentioned the best team in the East, Philadelphia Union. They lost 3-0 at Toronto FC. Toronto got their swagger back here. I want to talk San Jose real quick before we go to break and to Tam, Gam, and Sam. Or
do you want us to step off and Florian Youngworth can come co-host this?
I mean, maybe, because he roasted them. They lose 1-0 at home to Portland. Diego Valeri with a free kick goal. Youngworth comes out, and this is what he says. While his hair is just in like a state of extreme mustness, just all over the place, climbs out of the shower, quote, other teams are smarter, look more experienced. quote, "You can't compete if you play like this every week. It's impossible to win games." Quote, "It's too naive. It's nothing to do with men's soccer. It's youth soccer what we play, to be honest. The TIFO before this game that San Jose's supporters ran up there, beautiful TIFO, well done, hats off to you guys," said, "The strength to endure hell to inspire you to reach heaven." And right now they're enduring hell at the bottom of the league. Doesn't feel like there's much hope. It's just kind of been a downward spiral, and now this is, I would argue, is the bottom for now, I guess. It could get worse. But
I'm sure the fans appreciate it.
I mean,
that.
Florin Youngworth comes out and says,
what are we going to say? But what are we going to say?
Florin Youngworth
broke it down. He's also trying to probably one-up Zlatan there and trashing on his own team.
Yeah.
In post-game press conferences. And we talked about them last week, and I don't know that we have that much. Like, you didn't learn anything else about them.
Right. They don't finish.
Bobby, did you learn anything about them?
Because the Orlando conversation just makes me emotionally exhausted.
Yeah, okay.
I just needed a couple minutes to recover there.
Zlatan, after a 3-2 loss to the Houston Dynamo, "We can either wake up or continue like this, but if we continue like this, we don't want the same objective. We don't want to win. Either I wake up and I take care of it, or we all wake up."
Yeah.
Yeah. It's getting a little saucy in the post games out there in California. Yeah.
LA Galaxy don't defend.
We should point out, too, that good for Florin Youngworth for saying something, though. Right, a lot of players think this kind of thing after a game, and they give us the same old athlete crap. And we should applaud Florin Youngworth for saying something quote-worthy and, you know, just honest.
Yeah, same thing with Zlatan. Two wins. One of those was via Zlatan. Four losses since he arrived at the Galaxy. I mean, I don't know that he's ever been in a position like this. I mean, last year's problems aren't fixed.
No.
So it's still a team with issues. Giovanni Dos Santos with two goals in this game, but you said they can't defend.
Yeah,
I don't know what else.
Score.
I don't know what I add to that.
Right. That's the thing for Zlatan is, like, they're scoring goals. They look dangerous. It's not, like, always pretty or super cohesive in the way. Like, it's a lot of individually based, but they can score. They just absolutely cannot defend. And the first goal they gave up is just simple set-piece defending of, like, no one knowing their role. It's tough to watch.
Yep. Puebla with an easy one there. Seattle and Columbus draw 0-0. Seattle did so at home, up a man for like 85 minutes. No, not 85, 75 minutes, I guess, is better math there. That's not the result you want after a week in which it was all about the drama and your spending and the fact that your recruitment hasn't been good enough. Nothing? Got nothing for me, Bobby?
Got really nothing. We've talked about Seattle.
Who has?
Right, it's the same. Just feels like we have over and over. They're just...
You missed Thursday. So Thursday, me and Bobby basically did a whole, like, it's hard to predict what's going to happen because we don't know who anyone is. And then everyone kind of came in and played poorly that we said we didn't know things about. We called them enigmas. And then everyone just came in and played poorly this weekend.
Remained enigmas?
Yeah.
Vancouver Whitecaps, I assume.
This just makes me mad, right? I feel like I can really judge how well a team is prepared when they play down a man. Because when the opponent is down a man, what do? You sit deep and you sit in a low block. And it's hard to break down a low block. The usual things don't happen that lead to goals, like transition moments, like just counterattacks into open space, like 1v1 opportunities. You actually need to have a cohesive plan in order to break down the deep block of eight. How are we going to pass? You had to have talked about it in advance. You have to have a philosophy. And Seattle just doesn't, and it wears me down to talk about these teams that just don't appear to have.
Speaking of postgame quotes, go read Will Bruins, because he basically said all of that in a very straightforward manner that you are not accustomed to hearing from Will Bruin, but he smoked their ability to just, like, change directions, to figure it out, to say, you know what, this isn't working, we have another club in the back.
So, and Alistair Brewer sent in an email, and the way he worded that, which I liked, was he talked about some other stuff and then said, no speed, no midfield 1-2s. In the second half, we didn't even have Marshall or Roman for crosshuggers. We have 8 players that can possess and none that can break down in defense. Give me hope. And that's what you saw. Maybe Dempsey's the one guy who can because of his abilities. Lodero wasn't in this game, and I don't know that he's really been that guy over the last year at times, especially when Dempsey's on the field along with him. But you look at the two Roldans, and they're hardworking. Christian Roldan can tip the balance for you in a game that's evenly balanced. But he's not going to show up and beat 3 guys and change the game for you consistently. And outside of that, they don't have guys that are game changers. And, for example, Diego Valeri scores an unreal free kick and Portland walks out 1-0 with a win. Yeah, I know San Jose's bad, but Portland wasn't that great. But you have that guy who has that ability to do that for you. Seattle right now don't, and
they have Clint Dempsey on the field. I mean, you guys know how I feel about Clint Dempsey, but don't tell me they don't have a game changer.
But, like, one, how that's been your problem for 3 years now and you still have him. Two, he's 35 years old. Is your team built on a 35-year-old and whether or not he can, A, get healthy, B, in a mental place so he doesn't get a red card?
No,
we haven't seen the Clint Dempsey, like, complete game changer put you on his shoulder since Obo was there, I don't think. He's had moments, but
he missed the year when they won Cup, and then
hasn't been consistent. When it was him and Oba, you had this like dynamic attacking force that just couldn't be stopped.
I just think this isn't about a single game changer. I think it's about a general idea of how do a team, as a team, how do we move a ball and do combinations to break down the opposition.
Might be both. Nacho Piatti is a game changer. He destroyed the Revs in his 100th MLS game. Props to him. Joy to watch, Nacho Piatti.
LAFC, Anthony Jackson.
Man. Get him in the lineup. He scores goals.
Yeah.
Although I really enjoyed Remy Gard coming out and just blasting his team's professionalism, and then they go out and get his win. Well done. Raheem Edwards also performing as if he heard that spiel from his head coach as well. LAFC with a 1-1 draw in their second game at Bank of California Stadium. Real quick, midweek, Wednesday night, we got five games: Atlanta SKC, Columbus Philly, Toronto Seattle, Chicago Montreal, and LAFC Minnesota. Obviously, we're all going to be here and watching them, or at home, or sneaking it on our phones, ESPN Plus, whatever it might be. But you have a MLS Cup rematch here. You have the top of the East, top of the West in Atlanta SKC. You've got the best team in the East going to Columbus. You've got Chicago, Montreal.
I didn't know who the best team in the East was when you just said that. I had to look at it again. That's good.
I don't know why I decided that was where I was going to go.
No, I appreciate that. It's going to be fun. Atlanta SKC is a really good one. It's going to
And then Atlanta plays Orlando after that. Just want to point that out.
Yeah. Seattle also has
a... Also, Barco got his first goal this week, and it was a nice finish.
Yeah. Seattle have a tough week.
Yeah.
At Toronto, then back to the West Coast to Portland.
Yeah. For the rivalry game on Sunday.
Yeah, with Portland getting the break midweek. That's a tough week for Seattle.
Yeah.
Let us know what you think about week 10. 401-206-0-MLS. That's a hot take hotline. MLSsoccer.com. Mailbag.
Did we mention that Minnesota's won two games?
We did, yeah.
I said,
I gave you some options. Miguel Ibarra, three-game winning assist, one-game winning goal, which was the goal this weekend. Every game that the Loons have won this year.
Cool.
Miguel Ibarra has been the guy who tipped the scales in at least some way. So
and
congratulations.
I think our Thursday prove it if you're a good game was Vancouver, Minnesota, if Vancouver could go on the road and get a win. And they did not.
See, I would that win, I wouldn't have thought you've proven.
Yeah.
I figured you were
they
throwing
them.
They
did prove something by losing that game.
Correct. All right, let's go to break. On the other side, Gam, Tam, and Sam.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime@mlssoccer.com or tweet at Extratime Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Gam Tam, thank you, Sam. Time for Sam Stage Show. Time for Sam Stage Show. Time for Sam Stage Show.
You heard the jingle. That means it's time here on Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental, for Gam Tam and Sam. Sam Stage Show, welcome, Sam. In the break, you've revealed that you believe relish to be a subpar topping for hot dogs and or sausages.
I would like to say that I don't think it's subpar. I think it's unacceptable. That's
I'm
how
not gonna
strong
go that
I'll
far.
Go.
I just don't like it. I mean, you know, if you want to put relish on your dog or your brat, go for it, Weeby.
Okay.
I'm not here to tell you to not do that. Just don't put ketchup on it.
I will never ever
then,
put ketchup.
Because then we'll have problems.
Let's start here. Give me one take from the MLS weekend. We see your informal column on Twitter, and if you're not following Sam on Twitter, at Sam Stieschkel, go do that. What's your big take?
So you don't
take?
Know how to say his name, so now you just stumble over
that's how I do it now.
Yeah, so I'll read my tweets for you guys. Basically, one thing I found interesting this weekend, Anthony Jackson. I believe it's just he's going by Anthony Jackson now.
Really? He's gone away from the hyphenated.
He dropped it from the jersey, at least. I know that much.
Is the jersey he got with like the Kardashian sister, did that have the Jackson Hamel on the back?
I think that had Hamel on the back.
Ooh.
So,
okay.
Yeah. How far is he from just being AJ?
You know, I'm supposed to interview him tomorrow, so yeah. I'll ask him all of these things.
Yeah.
But I definitely found it interesting. He scored 2 goals, and I'm like, man, when this kid plays, he scores like all the time. But he doesn't play that much, so I just kind of find it confusing. So I dug into it a little bit, and I looked since the start of 2017, he is third in MLS in goals per 90 among players with at least 10 goals. The people in front of him, Joseph Martinez and David Villa. Two pretty good strikers. I don't think if I told you to guess that list, I don't think you would put Anthony Jackson third behind those two. So I found that really interesting. It stuck out to me. Montreal's had a lot of problems with just not having either efficient or effective strikers or not playing with a striker at all a lot of times this year. So I thought it was interesting that they have a guy on the roster who has been really effective, who Remy Gard called out a little bit last week and gave him a start. And he came through and pretty much the biggest way possible, 2 goals in 66 minutes. So interested to kind of talk to him, learn a little bit more about him, and hopefully put up a good piece on the site about him later this week. And I think that could be a big thing for Montreal if he can continue to kind of carry on and play well here. Let Piatti kind of have a little more freedom potentially if he can occupy some center backs and maybe create some more space for the impact as they go forward to the attack and try and put together a run here.
So Remy Gard definitely roasted some of these young players. And I'm curious, Sam, on your end, from a motivational standpoint, if we, David and I, for instance, if we were not satisfied with what, let's say, your performances on Extra Time Radio and we called you out publicly, how might you respond?
Sam, you know that I would never do this because I'm always satisfied with you.
Well, that's funny you say that, David, because you kind of roast me at the end of every phone call we have. So
sure.
Mixed messages here. How would I respond? Well, if it's from David, I try and up my game. If it was from you, we'd be maybe a little bit different. I might just get mad and stop answering the phone.
Gotcha.
But, if I was a professional athlete and I'm 23, 24, 25 years old, and my coach, who is in his first year on the job, and has only known me for a few months, calls me out, you kind of got to look inside yourself and say, okay, what do I want to do? Do I want to pout? Do I want to say, screw you, coach, you don't know what you're talking about? Or do I want to try and take this opportunity and prove him wrong? And I think you can kind of go one of two ways, and your career can kind of go one of two ways at that point. So, Bobby would probably have some good perspective on that.
No. We don't really have Bobby perspective, but I do wonder how good of content it would be for us to call you once a week, get your voicemail, and then move on with our show. So if we calls you out and you refuse to pick up,
you're really messing with my confidence. Gosh.
Yeah.
Oh, you're gonna get my voicemail. Yeah, okay, that'd be a power move.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
And
sorry,
then we leave messages on your voicemail.
Yeah, don't leave me a message. I won't listen to it.
You had an interesting video that you put out on the tiers in Major League Soccer, and it's been something that
– Spell that.
T-I-E-R-S,
cool.
Tiers, that we talk about this more and more as TAM, T-A-M.
No, I didn't need you to emphasize the R.
Oh.
T-E-A-R is another word
for
that sounds
for crybabies.
The same. Yes.
Gotcha, okay.
So I was trying to clarify.
All right, gotcha. So, look, with the with TAM, with DPs, with the kind of facility, academy, USL arms race, I mean, this is all up the ante when it comes to spending. And you had some interesting ideas about where that, how the stratification then comes into play with MLS teams. Walk us through that.
Yeah, so basically, with TAM coming into play, the ceiling on what teams can spend goes up a little bit, right? So the difference between the top spending teams and the bottom spending teams gets a little bit greater. And that means that there's going to be probably a little bit less parity. Not to say that a parity's gone, right? Because there's still a pretty, there's a pretty hard limit on what you can spend on everything but 3 players on your roster, pretty much, those being the designated players. So there's not going to be a huge, huge gulf in spending, even between the top teams and the bottom spending teams versus like the Premier League or something like that. But it is going to create some separation, I think. And I think if these teams are run properly, if they're not beset by a ton of injuries, then basically you're looking at 3 teams in both conferences that should be in the playoffs every single year. And in the East, I think that's Atlanta, I think that's Toronto, and I think that's NYCFC. And I think the Red Bulls are kind of right there knocking on the door.
So you don't have Red Bulls in your top three, huh?
Well, I put it right there. They don't spend quite as much money on their first team as those first 3 teams.
Welcome
you know, I would
to the conversation,
say,
Bobby.
I've been listening. I was just, I just wanted to point that out.
Yeah, I got you.
And we're taking an extremely long view here, so keep that in mind as well. And in the West, you're looking at both LA teams, LA Galaxy, LAFC, and Seattle, despite all that talk of, you know, efficiency and maybe they're not spending as much as the other teams in the league. They're still spending a significant amount of money. I think those three teams, and then probably Portland is kind of the fourth knocking on the door of that front three group. And those teams should be in the playoffs just about every single year. And then I mentioned the Timbers and the Red Bulls. They should also be in the playoffs just about every single year, you know, but those bumps in the road, they're going to deal with a little bit more of those in terms of injuries, in terms of depth, potentially just in terms of bad years, bad runs of form. They're going to be a little bit more susceptible to those types of things. And then you kind of almost have everyone else, right? Whereas the rest of the teams in the league just aren't spending quite as much money or haven't historically shown that they're going to spend as much money year after year. And they are kind of, in my mind, they're kind of going to be competing for those final three playoff spots, final two playoff spots in both of the conferences. That's not to say we're not going to have outliers that do really well and win a supporter shield or win MLS Cup, especially with MLS Cup, because, you know, playoffs, anything can happen. But I think for the most part, you know, you're going to kind of have a little bit of a separation and you're going to have the same group of teams start to dominate the regular season. And that's a theme that's come up pretty much every single time I talk to a GM or a coach or anybody involved in a front office. It's that they're all like, MLS is changing. This is kind of the new reality. And I think we've started to see that a little bit, if not so much in the standings quite yet this year, I think we've started to see it a little bit on the field in terms of how games are being played.
So is it money or nothing? Because, you know, you have your list here and I look at Orlando City, for instance, and they've spent a significant amount of money.
Yeah. So I think Orlando, you could put in that group of kind of teams that are knocking on the door as well. Should have mentioned them. But no, it's not money or nothing, obviously. And that, I think I kind of got at this a little bit in the beginning of my answer, right? There's still not a huge separation. So if you can find an advantage in another area, right? If you have a better coach, if you have a better identity, if your team's kind of cohesive and on the same page, or if you have an excellent USL setup and an excellent academy and you can get those guys on your team off cap and still have them be really effective players. There are ways you can close the gap, right? It's just harder if you don't spend as much. It's not rocket science here, what I'm talking about, right? Yeah. So if you're not going to spend as much money, you're going to have smaller margin for error. You're going to have to hit on a higher percentage of your big signings. And, you know, you're going to have a harder time competing year in, year out than the teams that are spending maybe two, three times, some cases four times, even five as much as you
sometimes
on,
six
on your first
or
team
no?
roster. Six? I don't know. The Union still has to reach salary numbers, so I'm not sure I'd be willing to go six without seeing those. But we'll see.
The Union jokes are following Bobby around like a bad habit right now. Peter Vermees, one of those guys that's helped his
organization. I was talking about the Players Union, not the Union. Wow,
that's how bad it's gotten here. Peter Vermees' extension. We talked through it for Sporting Kansas City. He mentioned today on a conference call that he has been contacted about the GM job and the coaching job. At least cursory talks. What does this extension mean for the U.S. national team's hiring process?
I mean, it sounds like from what Peter said, you know, they requested permission and had preliminary talks and didn't really advance beyond that. So I think probably Kansas City and Peter gave permission, but then Peter probably said, hey, you know, I'm working on this extension with KC. Maybe he used them as a little bit of leverage for that. Who knows? And things kind of fizzled out there. So I think for the U.S. national team, it's kind of a status quo. You know, we've been waiting and waiting and waiting for them to make a GM announcement and a GM hire. There's been a few names reported out there. They said they've talked to, I think, more than a dozen. So we'll see. The sense I've gotten is that, you know, they're kind of closing in on some finalists. But I haven't really been able to firm that up yet. I still get the sense that Ernie Stewart's still in the picture. So that's a name to keep an eye on for Philly Union fans and for USMNT fans. But, you know, the longer they go, and I've talked about this in previous weeks, the longer they go, the harder, maybe not harder, but they're not making it any easier on their eventual GM to make their coaching hire, right? So hopefully they can get this over the line quickly, and hopefully their GM can get in place and kind of set up what he wants for the next national team head coach, because I think we can all agree that's an incredibly important hire.
Sam, you get to give a one-word answer, I guess two words with the person's name. We were talking earlier on the show, and you have to start a franchise. And you have to give the keys to the franchise to one. It's not a player. It's to a general executive and or coach and or combo. What name do you pick?
So I can only pick one name, and it's a GM or a coach or both. That's a good question. I think I'm going to pick a combo, you know, because I want to kind of have those ducks in a row, right? So I think I'm going to go Greg Berhalter. Not going to shock you. He's been running both sides of the thing of the operation in Columbus in terms of being their sporting director and their head coach for a few years now. I think he has a pretty good success rate with his signings. And I think the ones that he fails on, he finds ways to kind of get out of the picture, sometimes at a significant, bringing in significant money via transfer sometimes, even with guys that don't make a ton of an impact in MLS.
You went over your two words, Sam. You had two words to answer.
Yeah, sorry. Greg Berhalter, I'm out. Okay. There you go. My bad.
Last one before we get you out of here. The World Cup is coming. We know it does not involve the U.S. national team. It does involve a number of MLS players, and they will start to trickle out into camps very, very soon. How is this going to affect the league?
Big time, right? I mean, obviously there's a little bit of a break in the MLS schedule for the World Cup, but guys are going to start leaving for their national team pre-World Cup camps as early as next week. So, you know, if you're an LAFC or you're an LA Galaxy, you know, you're going to – those Dos Santos brothers, Carlos Vela, they're going to be gone. Laurent Simon's probably going to be gone. We're going to – you know, the U.S. isn't in, obviously, but that doesn't mean a lot of big names aren't going to be departing. And one team to keep an eye on, I think, in particular, is Seattle, right? Nico Lodero probably going to Uruguay.
Is he probably? Roman, do we know that?
I would assume so. He was a regular part of their qualifying campaign.
It's a really
He's been a part of the team for years. That as well. He hasn't played a ton. He's usually on the bench, and sometimes he comes off the bench and gets some minutes. But given that he's kind of a veteran presence and by all accounts a solid guy, at least in terms of the Sounders locker room and a good presence for them, I would expect that he would be gone as well. I know the Sounders have been preparing for it, like he's going to be gone. So we're going to see a lot of big names depart, and, you know, some from teams that haven't gotten off to as good of a start as they hoped or expected. So that I think it's going to be really interesting to see how teams manage. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see how teams kind of evolve and adapt. And in particular, I look at the Galaxy for that one. We've talked a lot about how all these pieces fit in the attack, right? And a lot of that has been, well, Gio's in there, and how does Gio and Zlatan and Alessandrini and Kamara fit? And I think if you take Gio out of the equation, I think they kind of start to fit a little bit better. Not that the attack has really been the problem for them these last few weeks, but that's something to keep an eye on for sure.
We'll keep an eye on all of it. Cam Tam and Sam's doing the same. At Sam Stachel on Twitter, follow him there. See his work, MLSsoccer.com, a national writer. Sam, thank you for your time, man. Go with out relish somewhere, man.
Thanks. I'll relish the chance to do that.
All right, big thanks to Sam. We're going to break right now. On the other side, the mailbag.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime@mlssoccer.com or tweet at Extra Time Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
This is America. Don't catch you slipping now. Don't catch you slipping now. Look what I'm whipping now. This is America.
Back down Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental, into the mailbag. You know how to get at us. 401-2060-MLS is the Hot Take Hotline. Call us or text us. MLSsoccer.com/mailbag. If you want to do it through the site or email, is extratime@MLSsoccer.com. Ben Bear is here. Ben, we've gotten a few. I wouldn't say it's a flood.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've been CC'd or added on these
Twitter
messages.
No, I've been a pretty low profile these days.
Gotcha.
On Twitter.
Gotcha. People are
Ben rolled into this studio wearing sunglasses, and that's what he's like on Twitter. Just sitting back behind. Yeah. Just, you can't
Would
see
you say
eyes.
He's an enigma?
No. Ben
no?
is
I'm
the last thing Ben is an enigma. I can predict every one of Ben's actions for the next 2 weeks.
How would you respond to people
who
say that they have trouble listening to your segments of the show?
People are actually saying that?
Well, like a couple people. It hasn't been that many.
Whoa, dude. That way to put them on blast.
Yeah, this is immediately.
Well, I just want to know.
Is this a Remy Garn style management?
Yeah, that's exactly right. We're just out here trying to like burn it all down and see if the next performance is better. I'm not saying your performance has been bad. I'm just curious.
I think people don't understand quality when they hear it. So this is a perfect example of that.
Okay.
Oh, well, you don't like art? That's basically what you're
right.
saying.
Let's give him quality. It's time for some art.
Let's start with us going to the LA Galaxy. I am Josh, an LA Galaxy original since the first game in 96, when the both of you were probably still in diapers.
Was not.
Which made me
none of us were in diapers.
I was 10 years old at that time.
Anyhow, I'm writing to you both to ask for a favor. Please, under any circumstances, do not set foot in the StubHub Center. You both brought the ETR curse to my beloved Stubby. I was clearly enjoying the start of the game last week when I glanced towards Bingham's goal and I see you two with your photo vest just hanging around enjoying life when all of a
yes,
sudden
we
the
were.
Red Bulls score on us in the 7th minute. And then all of a sudden Drini's goal is disallowed after 2 minutes of play and our celebration ritual. And later, Bo Zlatan's goal is somehow disallowed and then a phantom handball is called for a PK for the Red Bulls. To make things worse, you travel to the other team in town's game, and they miraculously win in stoppage time.
Whoa.
How bizarre that all of this happened in one weekend. Sounds like the ETR.
I hadn't done the equation here where it was like, we show up, Red Bulls come and win, everything goes south for the Galaxy, they get kind of like hosed on some calls. This sounds like the ETR curse.
No, this sounds like people don't understand how anything works, and this doesn't sound like math. This is like saying 2 + 2 = 6.
Wait, you don't believe in the ETR curse?
Either you guys would have brought both teams' losses or both teams' wins.
Oh, is that how that works?
Yeah, that's how it works.
Ben's wearing an LA Galaxy polo right now, so you can blame him for any issues you might have.
Exactly.
Let's go to the Seattle portion of our show, which we've already been in, but we will now continue on. I waited to write this till after the game. I think it changed my opinion. First off, thank you, Bobby, for saying the brouhaha was ridiculous. It was. It's obvious when you look at NYCFC, Toronto, Atlanta, etc. We are being outspent. What's the controversy? By the way, someone tweeted at us and said it's unacceptable because Seattle is as big a city as Atlanta. I think Seattle's like 1 million people and Atlanta's like 5.6 million.
Yeah, it's not close.
Seattle, so Atlanta has more in their DMA.
Yeah, the metro area is like 5.6 mil, yes. I think is what I was saying. Mm-hmm. And Andrew, passion isn't always good. We got Trump out of misdirected passion. What did annoy me out of Lagerwey's announcement was the amount spent on one player. We are old. Dempsey, Marshall, Alonso, Torres, etc. We have a few bright spots. The Roldans, Nuhu, Kim, Morris, if he remains healthy, Lodero. My question before the Columbus game was why spend money on one player when we need to revamp? Wouldn't that be better spent on younger players to start the rebuild? And then this game happened. Is this indicative of needing more creativity? David Elliott's born in 74.
So we were talking about Sporting Kansas City and like what comes next for Sporting and how it pertains to Peter's extension. Is there an element of that with Seattle? I mean, that's when Garth Lagerwey talks about all the money spent on the academy and USL and trying to create that system and trying to compete. Isn't in some ways he saying the same thing? That like our place, our exalted place within MLS may not be.
Let's also take a look at what NYC, like you, people are throwing NYC into Toronto and Atlanta. I think Toronto and Atlanta are in a different tier than everybody else right now. Look at what NYC the past two off seasons with their DP signings. Maxi Morales, how big of it was that? That wasn't that big of an outlay.
Yeah.
He's only what? He's like at
1.5. Seven figure.
Is anyone signing DPs that aren't seven figures?
No, I'm saying
yeah, Weeby.
Everyone's seven figures. Yeah, but if you look at Jesus Medina, we don't know what his contract status is. They reportedly paid about $3 million in transfer fee. But I can't imagine his salary is more than maybe $1.5 million, $2 million. Garth is out here saying eight figures for a DP. That would put them with the Toronto and Atlanta. No one else is doing that right now, to me.
Yeah, no, I think, and that's what kind of baffled me even when Sounders fans are saying, yeah, but how is that money allocated versus transfer fee and salary? Like, no matter how that money is allocated,
it's
still a huge signing.
I just want to point out, in terms of semantics, he should have said 10 million instead of eight figures. It just sounds more powerful.
You think if Garth had said that, it would have sounded more powerful?
I actually thought that he had meant, it took me a second to count all the way to eight, but
gotcha.
10 million sounds
so
well,
for you personally, it would have sounded better.
When
but
you live in
know.
Our stratosphere, 7-8 figures, it just rolls off the tongue.
No problem.
Just saying.
Yeah, but I think they have a similar problem to Sporting Kansas City and a lot of teams that have been good
is this,
for a long time. Where it's like, how do you transition?
So, but what's being asked, is this a Seattle team that's one big signing away from being another MLS Cup contender?
Yes, because they play in the Western Conference.
Yeah, possibly, for sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Look, I don't – what they're doing right now is – I think they're between eras, kind of, really.
Yeah.
I mean, we've been talking about this for 2 years, that this is maybe the last go-around for a lot of these guys. Ozzy, Chad Marshall, Roman Torres, Dempsey. They're going to have a whole new team probably next year, by this time next year, if I had to bet.
Wow. Finally.
Would you guarantee it, though?
Is there
around building
to support
a
that?
How would I guarantee that is a real question.
I guarantee that this will have a whole new looking team this time next year.
Well, how do you
define whole new looking team?
I don't know. How
like
do
some
you?
Of those
you
guys might still be around.
Yeah, you
but
just
like they're not going to be like the building.
How
the
did this
foundation.
Get turned back on me? That's what I want.
That's what I do.
Okay.
TV. All
right.
Watching this Galaxy Dynamo match, and I can't help thinking that the Quakes absolutely skinned LA when it came to what they got the Galaxy to pay for. Bingham, a real lack of decisiveness, lots of getting stranded, and the all too frequent head scratching decision making.
I think the Quakes kind of just looked into that because they did decline his option.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, I mean, no, yeah. They did a great job getting what they got from him. I forgot what it was exactly.
250?
It was 250, something like that.
Yeah.
So getting anything from him after you decline his option is great. But I think they kind of like, I don't know what the Galaxy were thinking with that.
Yeah.
So we're thinking we had Clement Diop coming out making crazy plays last year. And
look,
they must have made a qualifying offer if they got money for him. They couldn't have just straight up declined his option.
No, because the Galaxy want – now we're talking about how acquisitions work in MLS, which is always a tricky topic. But I'm assuming they wanted to get him before he went to reentry. What they paid for.
So
they overpaid for him. We talk a lot about the Galaxy offseason.
Yeah.
But picking up Bingham was always the weirdest, especially for what
I think
paid.
We all said that at the time, too, because he was coming off a terrible season.
Yeah. Right. So Rob Green's here to give you a lesson in hot takes.
Robert Green?
I don't know if he plays for England.
Okay.
But maybe. Or did play for England. Here's a take. An MLS team will spend $100 million on a single transfer before the USA hosts another World Cup.
I mean.
Going by inflation.
Yeah.
Like, probably.
What was
I don't know.
80 it's whatever? 70 whatever?
We're a long ways away from that, obviously.
Are we?
But we might be a long ways away
already.
From the U.S. World Cup, too.
We're at 15 million already. We're at least
okay, but 15
8 years
million,
away.
But 15 million
World
for
Cup.
Barca, right?
Yeah.
What was the most before that?
Transfer in.
What was Almiron?
Almiron's like 8.
Yeah. So it was like
so
right.
So it doubled for Atlanta in 1 year.
Yeah, I think it's definitely possible. I'm going to put the odds at 5%.
Let's say that the U.S. does get 2026 World Cup.
No.
With Mexico and Canada.
No chance. You're going to
guarantee.
We're going to have 8-year long
guarantee
right now.
I guarantee that an MLS team does not spend
get it up on the wall.
On a player
what are you
going to
do if they don't?
I don't know.
I guess we'll know kind of soon.
From now.
No, but we'll know kind of soon.
Yeah, we'll know soon.
Let's say it is 2026. So that gives you – that's 8 years
because
away.
If North America doesn't get the World Cup, then it's definitely going to happen is a yes. Is like a $100 million transfer fee will happen before
yeah,
US
right, because the U.S. won't have
yeah, because the U.S. won't host for however long. So it's really all betting on that.
Yeah.
Which is part of the equation here. But if it's a 20 – so no, it's not going to happen.
Okay.
So Weeby's – Weeby's throwing out some World Cup
hill.
Guarantees over
I'm
here.
I'm dying on this hill.
Weeby's actually one of the voting parties.
I'm not.
He votes for Vanuatu. Isaac Anderson, as we approach the 10-game threshold, fascinated to hear your early shouts for MVP. Piatti, Almiron, BWP, someone else?
That's a top three.
I would say that's pretty
Almiron's
easy
number one.
Almiron's number
because
one?
Because winning is very important to MVP. If you're going straight numbers, BWP, I mean, BWP has to be up there because he's like off the charts with – his counting stats right now.
Red Bulls fans are going to jump.
I don't think he's affected the Red Bulls games nearly as much as the way Almiron has affected all of the Atlanta games because he's just been absolutely dominant every single – he's controlled the flow of action in every single Atlanta game this year since the Houston game.
Is there any other names that you
who's
two –
who's the third person on your list?
Piatti, who just has incredible counting stats too. So he's 5-6 right now, which is amazing.
Obviously, David Akam in the conversation.
David
so Akam
is definitely up there
with
who might be getting benched soon.
Is there anyone else you guys would like to throw in this? Early?
Is anybody from Sporting Kansas City? No, right?
Johnny Russell.
Yeah, I mean, Felipe and it's kind of they've had spurts.
I mean, Felipe is not going to get – he's
correct.
Out for 2 to 3 months.
Well, that's what I'm saying. They've had spurts. So, I mean, Joseph Martinez still leads the league in goals.
Look, I think Javinko still is – I mean, anybody from Toronto still has a shot.
Yeah, I think Dom Dwyer has a shout.
Over Kleshchen?
Well, Dwyer right now has to because he scored the goals.
I think Dwyer's the one who sets kind of the tone for the whole team,
fair.
To be honest with you.
I don't disagree. But really, Cash Mueller is the guy who should be getting Orlando shots.
Wisco. But yeah, I think it's Almiron right now and BWP at the top with Piatti just a slight sliver behind.
You have to make the playoffs to win MVP.
Yeah, agreed.
I just want to give a shout out to Dwyer.
Dwyer
has looked good for that group. There is a slight question that maybe he was just a product of Peter Vermees and that Sporting system. but he still – he almost looks like an improved version of what he was before. More pace, more power, more anger. It's been fun to watch him this year.
Yeah, I agree.
Speaking of Bobby explaining things to us like that, really love Bobby mansplaining to David. Really makes the show enjoyable or just extremely annoying. Comments like, if we're actually honest with ourselves, are ridiculous, at least until the next week when you come back, where you backtrack to say you're looking big picture, which is funny because seg one, you had us look big picture multiple times. And when you said that, I laughed, and now I get to read the article.
You didn't
include
the part where this guy says, Bobby, you are not the soccer god.
Do we think this was a man? Does a man say what another man does? Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it's a pretty popular term right now in general. I think it's a pretty good way to describe you as a person.
1,000%
yeah,
accurate.
This is our everyday lives at this point.
And last one, flaming myself, Benjamin Bellman. Empire Gosh just got to the point where you say Castillo hasn't been producing. What? Castillo's gotten better every week and has been dynamic in the attack while defending effectively. Are you watching the games or just
Edgar Castillo?
Yeah.
Not Ariel Castillo.
No. Edgar Castillo. The one who plays soccer in Major League Soccer.
We will miss Ariel. She left Major League Soccer.
I know. We had just started the Ariel Thursday mailbags to juxtapose the Monday Ben mailbags, and it was a great juxtaposition.
It was.
It was over before it started.
Calming yoga and Ben's.
Right.
Ben's intensity.
Me and Ariel sat next to each other for 2 years straight.
And that's why she left.
That's probably why she left.
And I think it says a lot about what we think of Colorado Rapids and Edgar Castillo's ability to inspire, and that we immediately shifted this topic. Big thanks to you guys, Bobby Warshaw, David Goss, Ben Bear, as well as Gam Tam and Sam Stashkill. I'm Andrew Reeby. That's it for us. Holler at us. We'll see you on Thursday.